The title of this year's Shabbos Haggadol Drasha 2008, What Time Is It? How Should I Know? In staying true to the theme of Pesach and the four questions, we will also ask four questions of our own. It says in the Haggadah, B'chol dor v'dor chayv adam liros etz atzmo ke'il hu yotzem mitzrayim, that we have an obligation in every generation to consider ourselves as though we personally have left Mitzrayim, liros. The Rambam in Hilchas Chametz Matzah says similarly, B'chol dor v'dor chayv adam liharot. And the Rav Soloveitchik explains the basic difference is lirot is that one must consider and feel this within oneself. Liharot means that one must behave this way continuously, not only within inside, but also in our actions outwardly. Our first question is why? Why would the Haggadah and the Torah require us to believe that we actually were in Egypt? After all, most of us probably never stepped foot in their lives in Mitzrayim. And furthermore, even if, let's say, you may have gone for a trip to see the pyramids, that doesn't mean you were ever a slave in Mitzrayim. Why would the Torah require us to pretend, to play make-believe, have mind games, as though we actually left Mitzrayim when we did not, personally? I can understand that we should be reminding ourselves of the miraculous events that occurred to the Bnei Israel, to our forefathers in Egypt, and all the difficulties that they went, and all of the tremendous miracles they experienced upon the Exodus. But why should we have to pretend of something which isn't true? Torah Emes and Moshe is Emes. Why would a Torah, which is Torah's Emes, require us to do something which seems to be a false, something which is not true? Our second question is found in Sefer Shemos. We know the famous dialogue between Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayomer Moshe Hashem, Moshe says, Lo ish davar manochi, I am not a man of words, I'm not a person who is able to lead the Jewish people out, because after all, I have a speech impediment. I am slow of tongue. I'm slow of speech. I do not feel that I would be the proper candidate to be the one to cause the Bnei Israel to be freed. And on this, the pasuk later says, "Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe." And the anger of Hashem was kindled against Moshe. He was furious that Moshe would even not for a second accept the position that, why would he hesitate? How could you hesitate? God is telling you to take this position. The difficulty with this conversation, this dialogue, is that if we can compare this to a promotion, in other words, for example, a person, let's say, is working in a hamburger establishment, a fast food restaurant, and he enjoys flipping burgers. And his boss comes up to him and says, you know, you've been doing such a great job for the past 6 months flipping these hamburgers. I want you to move up. I'm going to give you a promotion. I'm going to move you to fries. So the person could accept the position, or the person could say, you know, I really appreciate it, but the reality is I think I'm a little bit more equipped for the job that I'm doing, and I'm not really comfortable taking this new position, this more difficult position. Now, it's true that your employer may be a little disappointed that you're not accepting the position, but it's a promotion. It really should be something that a person has the choice to accept or not to accept. This being the case, why was it such a problem that Moshe Rabbeinu was unwilling to accept the position, so much so that V'yichar af Hashem b'Moshe, that Hashem was infuriated, was so angry at Moshe not willing to accept the job right away? The third question is that if a person has the opportunity to make a good impression, we know that first impressions can only be done, well, the first time. And therefore, it would make sense that when the Bnei Israel are being freed and given certain commandments, certain obligations in which they must do, certain mitzvahs that they must adhere to, you would think that the very first mitzvah would be such a very, very important mitzvah, something which is so special and unique, and something which really shows the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people as a nation. Maybe you would think, if a person would be asked, what would be the first mitzvah the Bnei Israel would be given? Maybe not to worship idols, maybe the observance of the keeping of Shabbos, but that's not the first mitzvah. The first mitzvah, as is cited in Sefer Shemos, Perek Yud Beis, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodesh Yashana. This month shall be to you the beginning of months, it shall be the first month of the year to you. Which means that the very first mitzvah that the Bnei Israel were given was in order to be able to calculate the months and the years and to establish their own calendar. The question is, why is that such a special mitzvah? Why would that be the first mitzvah? It doesn't seem to be extremely powerful. It doesn't really seem to show the greatness of Hashem or the importance of all the other mitzvahs, which are seemingly so much greater and so much more significant. So one could potentially answer this question that it's a prerequisite to keep the other mitzvos. In other words, we actually find this when it comes to Hanukkah, that Antiochus, one of the things that he made a decree against was that the Jewish people should not observe Rosh Chodesh and that they should do away and abolish the calendar system. And the reason for this, maybe, was that they were no longer, by not knowing the correct day in order to celebrate, they would not end up celebrating all these different holidays. They would not celebrate Pesach, they wouldn't celebrate Sukkot, or any of these other holidays, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And then the Jewish people would just end up assimilating and becoming completely unobservant because they had no idea anymore how to observe any of these holidays or when they should be observed. And therefore, one could correctly answer this third question, that to say that that's the symbolism, that the very first mitzvah that Hashem wants to give the Jewish people is a mitzvah in which we'll be able to build upon so that other mitzvos later on can be observed, such as the various chagim. But I'm still going to continue and say that this is a third question, because still, maybe this mitzvah, it is important, but maybe it could still be given later on. There seems to be a lot more important mitzvos to give to the Bnei Israel as a fledgling nation than to simply have the mitzvah of setting up and establishing a calendar. What's even more difficult, and this is going to be the overarching fourth question, is Rashi. Rashi focuses on the word Hazeh, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem. Rashi, as well as the Torah Tumim, which brings down a Gemara in Menachos, says, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Kasha Lila Moshe, that this whole mitzvah was extremely difficult for Moshe to understand exactly what to do, when exactly the moon's supposed to be a full moon, a new moon, when exactly is the decoration of the new month, Ad Sheharlo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'etzba, until Hashem showed Moshe with God's finger, so to speak. Shenamar, as the Pasuk says, HaKodesh HaZeh, this. And when a person says this, it's as though it's being pointed. And we're actually, we see this also in the Haggadah, that when we look at the Maror, as well as the Matzah, we point, HaZeh, this. And therefore, that's what Hashem did as well. But Moshe was a tremendous scholar. Obviously, Moshe was Mekabel, the Torah, and Har Sinai from HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Not only that, we know as we recite in Yigdal, Glokom bi Yisrael kamoshe o Naviu mabit etmonato. Moshe was a tremendous Navi, the greatest prophet who spoke to Hashem face to face, so to speak. And he was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham, one of the greatest minds that one could ever fathom. So how come Moshe had difficulty over this mitzvah? It seems to be a mitzvah which is not so difficult to understand. But which is interesting, we find elsewhere Moshe's confusion, an inability to be able to take a complete understanding of time-based mitzvos. We find this in the 11th parak in Sefer Shemos. The Pasuk says, V'yomer Moshe komar Hashem, Kechatzos alayla ani yotze b'soch Mitzrayim. That this is what Hashem said. This is Moshe quoting. Kechatzos, approximately around midnight, 12-ish. That is the time in which the 10th and final makkah of Makkas Bechoros is going to take place. Umeis kol Bechor Beretz Mitzrayim, Bechor Paro Yoshev Al Kiso, and Bechor Shivcha, Asher Achor Yechoyim. Doesn't make a difference if you're in the highest of heights, your Paro sitting on his throne, or your lowly slave behind the mill. Every single Bechor is going to be hit. And when is this time? Not a precise time, but Kachatzos, around midnight. And the question is, why did Moshe say the words Kachatzos around midnight? Why didn't he give a more specific time than this approximation? And on this is actually a question that the Gemara in Brachos asks on Gimel Medbez, and gives three different interpretations. We're going to end up focusing this evening primarily on the first of the three. But we're going to go through this entire piece quickly. V'dabed mihavi yada pal g'dalayla emos. This is actually taken out of context, that the Gemara said that David knew precisely when chatzos laila, when midnight was. The Gemara says, how is that possible? Hashem now. Moshe Rabbeinu l'havi yada. Moshe himself didn't know the correct or exact time of midnight. After all, the Pasuk says, Kachatzos halayla ani yotzi b'soch Mitzrayim. The Pasuk says explicitly that Moshe was only kind of sure. It wasn't really positive exactly when midnight was. That's why he said around midnight. Kachatzos. So the question is like this. My kachatzos. What does that mean in the Pasuk when Moshe said around midnight? Elaim, if you want to tell me, diyamalei kuchabrihu kachatzos. Do you want to tell me that what it means is that Hashem is the one that said, around midnight, I'm not exactly sure. Mi kasveka kamishmaya? That's not possible. Because Hashem has no doubts. Hashem knows exactly what's going on. He has the exact time. And therefore, there's no way Hashem was the one that said, kachatzos. Ella says the Gemara, answer number one, certainly Hashem said that the Makkah, the plague of the ten of Makkas Bechoros, is certainly going to take place specifically at exact Chatzos, exactly at midnight. The Asa Ihu V'yomer Kachatzos. And Moshe said Kachatzos around midnight. So what do we see? Says the Gemara, Alma Misafgale. So we see in this situation that Moshe, in fact, was in doubt. He was not sure of the exact time, exactly when midnight was. Now, on this Rashi says, V'asa'ihu v'yomer kachatzos, l'fishol ho'yiyodolach aben hasha'ah, because Moshe could not figure out the exact time. So the question is, why couldn't he not figure out the right time? So we have to, first of all, explain, chatzos, midnight does not mean 12 o'clock. Midnight means the middle of the night. So for example, let's say sunset is at 7 p.m. and that sunrise is at 7 a.m., which is a 12 hours of darkness. So therefore, chatzos, or the middle of the night, would be between the 12 hours, or it would be 6th hour in this perfect day, and it would end up being at 1 o'clock. Now, that we can now understand where it would be a little bit more difficult for one to be able to figure out the exact moment to the second, to the split second even, of when Chatzos is. So, we find that, in fact, Moshe did not know exactly when Chatzos was, and that is going to be our fourth and final question for this evening. Is why is Moshe having such difficulty knowing precise time, having difficulty with the time of when to determine when the new months are, with this first mitzvah, Chodesh HaZelachem, until Hashem actually had to show him directly, otherwise he couldn't figure it out? And why over here do we have this concept that he did not know exactly when Chatzos was, when David himself was able to figure it out? And the Gemara says the reason why he was able to do it is because David Simana Havile, that he had a harp, and at a precise moment at Chatzos, based on the various winds, the harp would blow, similar to an alarm clock. That's when he knew when Chatzos was. So since David lived in a more technological age, he obviously lived much later than Moshe, so it doesn't necessarily mean that David's smarter than Moshe, just like being that we live in the year 2008 and we have the internet and all we have to do is put a couple words into Google, we can find out so much information. That doesn't make us smarter. It's just we have information literally at our fingertips. And that's the same thing by David. David was able to calculate and figure out when Chatzos was based on his own level of technology, which did not exist in the generations earlier, in the generations of Moshe. But why did not Moshe understand what Chatzos was? So that's going to be our fourth question. But let's just for a moment look at this Gemara, which gives two other possible interpretations as to why it says Kachatzos. Probably the second explanation is that the more famous of the three. Rav Zera Omer, Rav Zera says, Moshe l'olam haviyad. Moshe really knew exactly when midnight was, but David Nami Habiyad. Really, David knew and Moshe knew. So the Gemara says, so if David really knew, why did he have a heart? So it was to wake him up, because even if you know when midnight is, but you may be sleeping through and you want to get up to be able to serve Hashem. So the Gemara asks, V'kivad de Moshe Habiyada. If it's so that Moshe in fact knew when Chatzos precisely was, Lomel Omer Kachatzos. So why does he say only approximately around midnight? Why didn't he get a more exact answer? Because that's what Hashem told him, Chatzos. So why didn't he also say Chatzos? So my answer is the famous answer that Moshe Ksav, the Moshe thought, Shema Yitu Atztagnini Paro, that perhaps the astrologers of Paro themselves, they would make a mistake, the Yomru Moshe Badoihu, and they would say that Moshe is a liar. So we're going to go back to that, but the basic idea is that everyone knew, even David knew and Moshe knew when Chatzos was, and the reason why he said around midnight was not because of his doubt, but he knew that the astrologers of the Egyptians would end up making a mistake, and they ended up saying, see, Moshe doesn't know anything. So that's answer number two. The third answer, which we'll go quickly through, and then we'll spend a few moments understanding explanation number two, Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, "Bipal ge'urta detleyasar nagi arbeasar havilei." That what this was, what happened was at the midnight of the night of the 13th, passing into the 14th of Nisan. And this is what Moshe was saying to the Jewish people, that Hashem was saying, L'machar kachatzos alaylo ki ha'idna. Just like right now I'm speaking to you at midnight, ki chatzos doesn't mean around midnight, it means ki, just like it is now exactly midnight, in 24 hours from now, there will be the 10th and final plague upon the Mitzrayim. And therefore, that's another way of reading Kechatzos. It really means midnight, but he's saying Kechatzos just like it's midnight now, in 24 hours from now, exactly, is when the plague of the slaying of the firstborn will take place. Now, let's focus for just a moment to divert for just a second to the second answer. The second explanation the Gemara gave is the reason why Moshe said it was around midnight is not because he didn't know. Moshe knew. So why did he say Kachatzos? Because he was afraid of the mistake of the astrologers of Paro. So the question is, why wouldn't these foolish astrologers believe in Moshe? After all, if you think about it, he's batting 1,000. He's given 9 makos, and every single one of those plagues happened. He said that a plague is going to happen, and he delivered on it. So now all of a sudden, when it comes to the 10th plague, what's going to happen? They're going to see that the Makkah was supposed to happen at, let's say, 12 o'clock, assuming that that's what Chatzos was, exactly at 12 o'clock to the second. It ends up happening at 12:05. They still died. There's a tremendous 10th plague. So what is the whole problem that all of a sudden he's going to be concerned? Moshe's a liar, Moshe Badoi. What do you mean? They're going to still see this Makkah come about. And unfortunately, to explain this idea, is that we find so many times that it takes tremendous effort to construct and to build, but all it takes is one cowardly act to destroy. And this is the perception that these Rishoyim, that these astrologers of Paro had, that they were really just looking for an excuse not to want to believe. And we find this actually also in Shmuel Aleph, In Shmuel Aleph, we find a very interesting story about the Plishtim, that the Philistines had taken the Aron away because they had defeated the Jewish people, and at the same time also Chofni and Pinchas, the two children of Eli, were also died on the battlefield. And it was a terrible tragedy. But what ended up happening, because the Plishtim had taken the Aron, which of course they shouldn't have, they were struck with a terrible, terrible, bizarre disease, literally as translated as hemorrhoids. And because of this, they had to get rid of the Aron. Wherever they brought the Aron, every single city kept getting struck with more and more plague, until there was actually breaking out a disease which caused death. And therefore, because of this, they decided to get rid of the Aron. What ended up happening? They decided to bring back the Aron on a wagon. They got a new wagon, and they used cows to pull it. But interestingly, the Pusik says that they used cows which never pulled any yoke, never had a yoke upon them, never pulled anything, and that they were nursing, and that their young would desire and need milk. And the cow would naturally not want to leave its young. And over there in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Rashi says the reason why is because they wanted to see this on the Sion, to see if these animals would end up going back to the Bnei Israel. And if not, then it would have been a proof that in fact all of this was just by chance, and not that God was involved, which is unbelievable, because all these other things went against them. They had all these terrible diseases. Every single place, numerous cities, tragedy struck. And as soon as it went to a city where nothing happened, tragedy struck there as well. But the answer, as we see here as well, is that when a person does not want to believe, they'll use any excuse in the world to not want to believe. And therefore, Moshe felt obligated to cover himself, so to speak, to say, kachatzos, so that there would be no possible way for them to not believe. Another possible approach as to why the astrologers of Paro potentially would have made a mistake and thought that Moshe was lying is explained by my Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yochanan Zweig. Then he explains that midnight really doesn't even exist. What do you mean midnight doesn't exist? Because as we said before, midnight means the middle of the night. So if you can imagine, let's say you have a football game in which there's four quarters. Well, let's use two halves. You have 30 minutes and 30 minutes. And in between is halftime. Halftime, there is no time. It doesn't exist. It's not part of the game. It's the same thing when it comes to chatzos. Chatzos really doesn't exist. Because if, let's say, you have 12 hours of darkness, let's say from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. So when is chatzos? The first half is 6 hours. The last half is 6 hours. And there's nothing in between. Which means that the Egyptians looked at this plague that Moshe would have said chatzos, they would have said, Badoi, you're lying, because it's impossible, because you're saying that this plague would have happened in something which does not exist in time. And he explains, Maharav Shiva does, that we constantly find this concept of chatzos. We find this in Kabbalah and mysticism, but we also find this in fairy tales like Cinderella, that things happen magically precisely at chatzos, at midnight, because it is a magical time. Never explains, that's the reason why Hashem himself had to bring this Makkah of Makkas Bechoros, because it did happen precisely at chatzos, at a midnight which does not exist, and therefore because of that, Hashem had to bring it. They thought that Moshe was a liar because they didn't believe that God was directly involved in all these Makos. And since that was the case, he knew that it was impossible for a human being to be able to do something in Chatzos, because Chatzos doesn't exist. And for that reason, they would have felt that Moshe was a liar. Of course, Hashem, who is beyond time, who is beyond space, he was able to do so precisely at Chatzos. And just on the side, this also explains, as I often quote, the famous pshat of the Rogachover, that there's a famous question, one of the more difficult philosophical questions in Judaism, is Yediyah and Bechira. that how is it possible that Hashem knows the future? Hashem knows what I'm going to be doing in 5 minutes and tomorrow. God knows what I'm going to be doing next year. Yet, at the same breath, we say that we have bechira, that we have free will. How could I have free will to do something when Hashem knows exactly what I'm going to do anyways? Doesn't that mean I don't really have free will? So the Ragel Sheva beautifully explains that the only reason why it's a question, and it is still a question to us, is because we are limited to time and to space, that we are we have a finite existence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is infinite, therefore he's beyond time and beyond space. It's not a question. Because God is not limited to time, he has the ability to know what we're going to do tomorrow. To us, it's impossible to comprehend what that means, because it's impossible for us to comprehend anything which is beyond time, anything which is beyond physical space. And therefore, for this reason, that's the reason why Yedin and Bechira are in fact not a question whatsoever. So, now we understand a little bit about this second explanation. But one could still wonder, why is Moshe crossing his T's and dotting his I's with these Egyptians? After all, they're Rishayim. We mentioned that 9 plagues happened one after the other, and yet they're still looking for excuses to not want to believe. So who cares if Moshe says Chatzos or Kichatzos? What's Moshe's concern? He's afraid that the astrologers of Par are going to make a mistake. Who cares? Let them make a mistake. What difference does it make? It's not going to affect them or change them in any way. They're not going to become tzaddikim and righteous. So what's the symbolism, the significance of Moshe saying Kichatzos because of the fear of what the astrologers are going to say? And I believe that certainly Moshe understood that the astrologers, whatever they would say, and whatever Moshe would do was meaningless, would have no impact upon them whatsoever, because they're completely lost. But the reason why Hashem, although saying Chatzos, Moshe thereafter said Kichatzos, it was not for them, it was for us. That we shouldn't lose the emuna and the faith and the bitachon in Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Emes, Vesaraso Emes. That we should not think for a second, you know, those Egyptians, maybe they're right. Maybe Moshe is a badoy. And therefore, in order to make sure that we would have still the correct level of faith in Moshe, and in turn, of course, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for that reason, Moshe had to say Kachatzos. Not for them. Not for the astrologers, because it was worthless. Who cares about what they say? But the problem is what they say could have a direct impact on our ears. That if we hear them, they may negatively influence us. And this concept we find throughout. We find this actually in the very first Rashi in Chumash. Bereishis bara Elokim as the Shemayim v'yed ha'aretz, that Hashem creates the heaven and the earth. On this Rashi, according to many, quoting his father, the very first Rashi in which he gives honor to his father, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Lo hayisarach lahaschil satorah el mehachodesh hazolachem, that the Torah really, because it's a book which tells us what we should do, what we shouldn't do, it's a book which guides us, it should give us only the very first mitzvah. And we shouldn't have this whole Sefer Bereishis. We should start in Parshas Bo. After all, she mitzvah rishon eshin tzavah v'yisrael. Start with the first mitzvah. U'matam pasach b'Bereishis. Why do we begin with Bereishis Bara? And on this Rashi says, because she'im yomer umos ha'olam l'Yisrael listematem. What happens if the nations of the world turn to the Jewish people and say, you're a bunch of bandits, you're a bunch of thieves. Why are we thieves? What did we do wrong? What we did was, shklashtem aratzus shiva goyim. Just like, let's say I'm stronger than my neighbor. I can't go into my neighbor's house and throw them out of their living room and say, get a new house. I can't do that. It doesn't work. It's their house. I can't just, because I'm stronger, beat you up and steal your property. That makes me a Russia. So on this, the nations of the world turned to the Jewish people and said, what right do you have to march into Eretz Yisrael and to steal our land? That you went in there and you conquered the land from the 7 nations, from the Shiva Goyim. You're a bunch of listim, you're a bunch of crooks, you're a bunch of thieves. And on this, Haim Omrim Lehem, we will say, Bereishis Bara Elokim et Hashamayim et Haaretz. Kol Haaretz Yo Kodesh Baruch Hu Hi. All of the land belongs to God. He created it, and therefore he can give it to whoever he wants. He gave it to you guys for a little while, because that was Hashem's will. In His will, He took it away from you, and now He gave it back to us. So, we learn this Rashi, we should be able to go to our quote-unquote friends in the Middle East, and say, state in Rashi that the land of Eretz Yisrael, Bismanenu, in our time, is ours. How come you're fighting with us? Why are we going through this whole peace process business? Why are we having to give you any land? Rashi says explicitly, Brachus Barukim, Venasnu Lanu, that Hashem gave us the land. So what's the obvious answer? They'll laugh at us. They'll say, who's Rashi? What do I care about what he has to say? We don't believe in it. So therefore, what is the purpose of this whole business? The answer is that we don't need to know this information so that we have a good answer to these people, because they're not going to listen. They're still going to believe that we're thieves. But nonetheless, when we are accused that listem atem, and we have nothing back to answer, maybe we'll think to ourselves, you know, maybe we are thieves. Maybe we did steal that land. And therefore, the purpose of Brachus Bara is not for that, but it's for us. For us to realize that Hashem gave us the land. We're not thieves. You may think we're thieves, but the issue is that we shouldn't think that we're thieves. And this is what we find also in Perkei Avos, in the second chapter of Ethics of Our Fathers, V'dol ma shetoshev l'apikoros. Rabbi Elazar says that you need to know how to answer such Rishayim, someone who's an apikoros. And on this, Rabbi Avadia Mebartanura, the Bartanura says, an apikoros is Lashon Hefker, someone whose life is completely ownerless, so to speak, as to mean that they don't care about anything. They have no morals, they have no values, nothing matters to them. So why do you need to know what to answer? So he says, "B'tshuva zu she'atameishu v'apikaris." The answer that you give better be a good answer. Shoyefat talib chalintos l'daito. So you're not going to start believing in what they believe in. So you're not going to start thinking the way that they think. And therefore, to echo this concept, also when it comes to the astrologers of Paro, we don't care what they think, because they're never going to be swayed. They're never going to be influenced to end up doing that which is correct. But we need to know the correct answer so that they don't have a negative influence on us. And this is possibly, in conclusion of this thought, this is the meaning of the Rasha. The Rasha asks a klutz kasha. He asks a question which maybe he shouldn't have asked. And on this, the Haggadah tells us, so what should you do? You should walk up to him and smash him right in the mouth. You should break his teeth. So, we have to understand, in the year 2008, you're at a Seder table, and you go up to one of your children who asks a question which maybe you shouldn't have asked. All of a sudden you walk up to him and you smash him in the mouth and you break his teeth. Well, if you do that, you should go and lean over and kiss your toothless kid goodbye, because 100% an agency is going to take that child away. Certainly the Haggadah cannot be telling us, in teaching us, corporal punishment is a good thing, to the point of actually causing physical damage to your child. So what does it mean that you do this to the Russian? So on this we have the famous Gematria. The word Russia is the numerical value 570. Shinav, Shin, Nun, Yud, Vav is 366. The Haggadah is telling you to take the teeth out from the Russia, or to subtract 366 from 570, which gives you 204, which is the exact Gematria numerical value of the word Tzaddik. So what does this mean? It could have two connotations. First of all, it could possibly mean that when you silence the Russia and allow that child to start listening, then maybe that child become a tzaddik. But sometimes that doesn't work. And what ends up happening is the reason why that Russia came to that Seder is to say, Ma'avodah zos lechem. What are you guys doing? You're wasting your time. This is silly. You could be going and watching primetime television right now. What are you doing sitting at a Seder, spending all this time reading this ancient text, this Haggadah? What's the purpose of it? It's a waste of time. And on this, Hakeshinath, we silence him. And we need to give a very strong answer. Why do we need to give a very strong answer? It's not necessarily for that Russia. Because that person, unfortunately, we find, was a Russia, is a Russia, and tomorrow will be a Russia as well. Next year, at the Seder, we'll still hear from that Russia. But the problem is, will that Russia influence the other people at the Seder? When he asked, Mahavodah Zosachem, this is a waste of time, this is silliness, maybe some people say, Taka, maybe it is silly. We need to say, no, it's not silly, it's not foolishness, it's for us. And as we said, the second explanation of why Moshe was meticulous to say Kachatzos was not because he cared about what the astrologers said, because those astrologers will never be changed. But he's concerned that maybe the Klai Yisrael will think, maybe in fact Badoi, maybe in fact Moshe is wrong. But we're going to be focusing for this evening on the first explanation. The first explanation is going to be our fourth question, which we're going to review them all now, going out of order. The fourth question is, why is Moshe having all this doubt? He has doubt when Chatzos, when midnight is precisely. Moshe also has doubt with regard to the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZelchem, of calculating the correct dates for the holidays. Why is it so difficult? Why is he having difficulty with this? The third question that we asked is, why is this the right mitzvah? Why HaChodesh HaZelchem? Of all mitzvahs, maybe you would give a more impressive mitzvah to be the very first one to introduce to the Jewish people. Our second question is, when there was a conversation that Moshe just did not want the position of taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, why was Hashem so angry? V'yicharaf Hashem b'Moshe. When it comes to a promotion, a person should have the right of refusal. And finally, b'chol dover dor chayev adam liros es atzmo, ki ilhu yatzim b'Mitzrayim. Are we playing games? After all, we never, in fact, physically did leave Mitzrayim. So to answer these four questions, we must first analyze the words from the Haggadah. We begin Magid by saying, Halach ma'anya di'achol avatan nebi'aradim Mitzrayim. That this is the poor bread that was eaten in the land of Mitzrayim by our forefathers. Hashta avde, now we're slaves. L'shana ba bi'aradim Yisrael. Next year will be in Israel's free people. The Halach Ma'anya, which I only read part of it, I'd like to focus on those first few words. Halach Ma'anya is often translated as, this is the bread of our affliction. The truth is, this is written in Aramaic, and some explain it's as an invitation, and that was the language that people understood, and that's the reason why it was written in Aramaic. Halach Ma'anya, we see that there are aleph as the suffix of these words. Lachma, remove the aleph, is lechem, bread. Anya, remove the aleph, is an ani. Which means that lechem ani, lachma anya, is poor bread. The question is, why is matzah poor bread? In fact, it's the exact same ingredients as fluffy bread. And bread, which is fluffy, delicious, challah, that's the same ingredients. We don't call that poor bread, but it's just made out of flour and water, matzah. Why is it poor bread? So some people jokingly say, at $18 a pound, it's bound to make you poor. You'll become an oni by buying this lechem. I'd like to share with you three possible explanations. There are numerous answers to this question, why it's called lechem oni, why it's called poor bread. The first I'd like to share with you is from the Haggadah Shel Pesach of the Rashbats, Rav Shimon ben Simach Duran, who was born in 1361 and died in Algiers in 1444. He says, the reason why it's called lechem oni, or poor bread, is ki kein darko shel oni l'maher l'afos l'asviya ravona. You can imagine. A person is starving, not just hungry. I'm talking about starving to death. And you come across some food. You have something that you're able to eat. So what are you going to do? Are you going to marinate the food, your meat, and let it sit for hours and hours, and wake up the next morning and prepare it a little bit more and cut it into little fine pieces and have a nice garnish? Of course not. You're going to bake it or cook it in the fastest way possible so that it'll be prepared so quickly so you can eat it right away. So when it comes to fast food, most people think fast food restaurants began not too long ago, and your local, your microwave, and all these different ways to produce fast food is something which is really new in this generation. The reality is, fast food, the original fast food, was matzah. And therefore, we can also understand what the Rashbats is telling us, is that a poor person doesn't have all day. A poor person needs to think about their next meal. So let's say they come across a little bit of flour and water. They're not going to spend a lot of time preparing it because they need to go back to work and to get some more money to be able to get more food for the next meal. And therefore, for this reason, a person who is poor is someone who will be more likely to eat matzah or fast food. And it's very fascinating that it wasn't just the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. We find also the paradox of obesity and hunger. That a person who is extremely hungry in this generation, tremendous articles, they also, very often, people who are in poverty in the United States, there's a tremendous level of obesity. And the reason for this is the connection and the tremendous amount of fast food that is found in these places. And Jason Block, who is an author and a doctor in the Women's Hospital in Boston, says, quote, "More convenient access likely leads to the increased consumption of fast foods in these types of populations." And he adds, saying, quote, "Likewise, because of limited financial resources, low-income populations may simply seek out the most calories for the lowest prices." Which leads us to the second explanation, the Zevach Pesach. Why is it called poor bread? Because, as we all know, matzah doesn't digest very well. And that's not so good for us. But it was very good for them. Because it didn't digest well, the Zevach Pesach says, "V'tisha'er bo zman rav." It stayed within one's stomach for a very long time. It lasted for a very long time. And therefore, it just made sense. Even though it's true, the poor person could allow that dough to rise, but bread will go through their system much quicker. And therefore, they decided instead to eat matzah, in which sticks to one's innards, and therefore, they will not get hungry so fast. And therefore, lechem oni, poor people will specifically direct themselves to something in which will not digest properly or quickly. L'chein, to speak ma'at ma'amatza l'ochla v'anim yachua. Because of this, they also will not need a lot of it. They're not going to need to make mass quantities of matzah. And that's perhaps the reason why we say, when it comes to yachatz, the larger piece we set aside for the afikoman. As though to say, a poor person will set aside a large portion, and a small amount of matzah would sustain them for an extended period of time. I also believe that the idea of a tisha'er bo zman rav, that it lasts for a long time, doesn't only mean within your stomach, but also means in your kitchen. Because even though it's true that matzah and bread have the exact same ingredients, there's a significant difference between their shelf life. And we know this. Let's say a person, for example, forgets to throw away their challah on Shabbos. They don't eat challah throughout the week. And all of a sudden, Friday night comes and they grab some of this challah from last Shabbos. There's a good chance that Shabbos, they will discover bread which is green. It's all moldy. Because bread does not last. And it makes sense that why would you, if you're a poor person and you come across a lot of dough, why would you make bread which you can only eat for a short period of time? It would make more sense to have matzah. And this is the same reason by one of the seven Noahite laws, one of the Shiva mitzvot b'nei Noach is Eber min Achai. So what exactly is this? You're not allowed to cut off a limb off a living animal. So why is that one of the seven laws? Strange mitzvah. Why would anyone want to do that? I can understand not murdering, not stealing. All these things are obviously extremely important. Idol worship, adultery. But what is this idea of Eber min Achai? So before refrigeration, you can imagine a person had a whole cow. If you would shecht and slaughter that entire cow, what are you going to do with all that meat? A lot of it's going to spoil because it's not going to last forever. So instead, there was the temptation of literally cutting off the limbs, which of course is forbidden because it's sar bali chayim. It causes tremendous pain to an animal, which one is not allowed to do, according to Jewish law. And therefore, because of this, they would end up eating the limb. Then they would eat another limb, but the animal would still be alive, so that the animal would still be able to retain its freshness, and therefore it wouldn't spoil. With that same idea, we can understand why lechem oni, according to Zevach Pesach, is v'tishor bo zman rav. That when it comes to bread, it doesn't last. It gets moldy. And a poor person is not going to want food to prepare food, which he won't be able to save for a later date, because let's say next week you won't be able to get to any food. So much better for him to make matzah so that the matzah will last longer. I'd like to focus today on the third and final explanation as to why matzah is called lechem oni, or poor bread. And that is the explanation of the Rav Soloveitchik. There's a famous Mishnah in the third chapter in Masechtas Brachos that says that avadim, slaves, are patur in Kriyat Shema. That a slave does not have to say the Shema. And what is the reason why a slave does not have to say the Shema? For example, of a cluster of other mitzvos. She mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Because saying the Shema is a positive mitzvah, but it's bound by time. The chol mitzvah saseh shazman grama avadim paturos. Any mitzvah which is a positive mitzvah, which is bound by time, the Torah does not require slaves to perform such mitzvahs. And the question is, why not? Why can't an eved, or why doesn't the Torah require a slave to perform mitzvahs which are time bound? So it's interesting that when it comes to the Manishtana, the child asks the famous first question, Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halelos. And the word halayla hazeh, the gematria of halayla hazeh, 97, is the exact same gematria as zman, zayin mem nun, 740-50, 97. And therefore, I believe when the child asks the question, Manishtana halayla hazeh, Mikol Halelos, why is this night different from other nights? When we answer them, we say, Manish Tana. You want to know what the difference is? It's Halayla Hazeh. It's 97. It's Zman. The difference between being a slave and being free is the idea of Zman, the idea of time. And on this, Rav Yosef Soloveitchik explains in greater detail. He says two ideas. That first of all, an enslaved person does not have the luxury of letting their dough rise. And the reason why is because time is not their own. Because they're subservient to their master, they are not allowed to do whatever they want. The master's not going to allow that guy to sit in the kitchen for hours preparing bread. And therefore he says, make it. And I want you to bake it as quickly as possible, eat it right away, and get back into the field. And also, nothing belongs to a slave. Whatever a slave does, whatever work he does, it goes directly to his master. And because of that, you can imagine the lack of motivation. Using one's time as a slave is clearly meaningless. If you work very hard and you make millions of dollars for your master, or you sit back in your lazy boy chair as a slave and do nothing, it doesn't matter because you're not gaining anything anyway. So therefore, one could imagine that laziness is part of the job of being a slave. And the value of time, it just isn't there. And therefore, what Rav Soloveitchik explains is that when you're a slave, we're not going to require you to do mitzvahs which are bound by time, because one is not time sensitive. And also, when time is now your own, you just lose the concept of the value of time. With this said, now that we understand the idea of the slave mentality, according to Rav Soloveitchik, that does not have the ability to focus on time and the precise concepts of time, of being exact with one's time, of caring about every second, we can now answer some of our questions. We can understand Moshe, who was the leader of a slave nation, why he had difficulty with time. Why, according to the first explanation, Chatzos, David, who was a free man, was able to understand the precise time of midnight. But Moshe, who had the slave mentality, was unable to focus on the preciseness of Chatzos. This also explains why Hashem was so upset at Moshe. Because, again, we asked, well, Moshe, I mean, after all, why couldn't he just refuse this position? So the problem is that while Moshe was having this leisurely conversation and time was going by discussing why he shouldn't accept his job, Jews were suffering. The Bnei Israel were enslaved and in pain and being beaten and possibly even beaten to death. Beperach with back-breaking labor. And here, Moshe, you are having a conversation? At the first opportunity, he should have jumped to save the Jewish people. So why didn't he? Why did he delay? Why did he tarry? And I believe it's the same idea. Moshe, who was the leader of a slave nation, who had a slave mentality, did not understand the value of a moment. Every second that went by, although Jews were suffering, Moshe did not have the ability to have that sensitivity, because he himself also was connected to the slave nation. With this, we can also understand, when it came to Achodesh HaZelachem, Moshe, who was such a brilliant man, who knew basically all of Torah without fail, knowing almost anything that you can possibly ever imagine, but when it came to time, when it came to a mitzvah which was connected to him being a leader of a slave nation, he had difficulty. He grappled over it. He had confusion. Because at that moment, Moshe also, being the leader of a slave nation, had a slave mentality, and therefore did not value time as of yet. So therefore, when Hashem takes the Jewish people, mi'avdus l'cheirus, from slavery to freedom, how are you able to break that feeling of not caring about time, of not valuing a moment? How is Hashem able to instill the value of every single second to the Jewish people? And the answer is giving them the very first mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZelachem, the calculation of the new moon. Says the Sforno, Mikan v'eilech yu hachadoshim shalachem. From now on, the times, the months, they're yours. Lasos behem kirtzonchem. You, the Jewish people, you can do as you wish with this time. Avli b'yemei ha-shibud, in the time in which you were a slave in Egypt, lo ha-yemeichem shalachem, the time of you was not yours. And since you did not have your own time, you were not time conscious. And since you were not time conscious, you did not know or value what time was. Because you had to do the will of your masters. And if your master said, I want you to work, you worked. And you baked matzah, and you didn't have any more time but to bake the very bare minimum. Therefore, says the Sforno, at this time, I'm giving you this mitzvah. Precisely this particular mitzvah, Chodesh Hazeh, is the appropriate mitzvah to give the Jewish people so that they should become time conscious. That this mitzvah was now a way for the Jewish people and Moshe Rabbeinu to begin to appreciate the value of time. And therefore, when a person goes out to freedom, it doesn't just mean that you are now free and you can do whatever you want. Because that's not true freedom. They could have gone out and done whatever they want and squandered that opportunity and wasted it and have ended up connecting themselves to certain things which are addictive personalities, things which are not things that will set an individual free. Says the Baal HaTurim, when the Pasuk says, HaChodesh is a Lechem, Lechem, they are the same osios, the same letters as Melech, as king. Because the reality is, not all of us are going to be a king over an entire world or a country, or maybe not even over our own homes. But to be a melech, to be a king, one could be a melech over lechem, over yourselves. And this is the ultimate level of zman cheruseinu, of being free. Because otherwise one could say, what is this business of zman cheruseinu, of being free? After all, we were slaves to a king by the name of Paro in Egypt. Now we're slaves to a god in the desert. We're not going mi'avdus l'cherus. We're going mi'avdus l'avdus. No. Zman cheruseinu. Because Hashem is now instilling upon ourselves the value of lechem, the value of taking control over our lives, having mastery over ourselves and mastery over our time. Taking control is lechem. Taking control over oneself is the ultimate level of cherus, of being able to do what we want to do, but because we know it's the right thing and that we have control and value over ourselves and over time. We can now understand the idea of the Korban Pesach. One of the laws of the Korban Pesach, the Torah tells us, is Al Tochu Mimenu Na, that one is not allowed to eat this Korban while it is raw. And just like matzah, when a person is a slave, as we said, they have to bake it very quickly. They do not have time because time is not their own. And therefore, at this point, when we eat the Korban Pesach, which is the ultimate freedom food, a time in which we take their God, lowercase g, and we rebel against them, saying, we are not masters over, you are not masters over us anymore, and we're not going to listen because we don't have to listen to you anymore. That is the Korban Pesach. And therefore, precisely, Al Tochu Mimenu Na, we do not want you to eat that Korban while it is raw, because we are able to do whatever we want. We do not have to eat it when it is raw at the least amount of time. However, interestingly enough, the Torah says, Ki im sli esh, it has to be roasted, meaning that you have to make sure that it's prepared quickly so that one does not spend all day in the kitchen and waste all their time. Korban Pesach is clearly a freedom food. But how about the matzah that we eat? Is matzah a freedom food or is it a slavery food? To answer this, we have to ask, why do we eat the matzah at our Seder on Pesach night? To remember that the slaves ate it? That's not the reason. Even though we say Halach Ma'anya Diachol Avatana Biyarda Mitzrayim, that this is the bread that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim, Rabbi Gamliel gives us a completely different answer. Rabbi Gamliel, who tells us that Kol Mishul Amar Shlosh Devarim Il BePesach LeYitzedei Chavaso, that we have an obligation to learn and talk about three things: Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. One of them being Matzah. Says the Haggadah, Matzah zu she'anu ochlin, the matzah that we eat, al shoma, why are we doing so? And on this the Haggadah says, ki lo chometz, ki garshim mitzrayim v'lo yochlis mameya. The reason is that when we were free, when we left Mitzrayim, we were no longer slaves, but we still ate matzah. So why are we eating matzah? We're not eating matzah to remember that we were slaves, but we are supposed to remember we are free. So why then are we not eating bread? We're free. Because we did not have enough time for that matzah to rise. We did not have time. V'lo yochulis mameya. And the Haggadah Brura echoes this and says that this is the difference in the language of the Haggadah. When it came to Rabbi Gamliel, he said, matzah zu sh'anu ochlin. In our generation, when it comes to Halach Ma'anya, it says, shahayu avoseinu ochlin. That's what our forefathers ate. But the commemoration and the eating of the matzah now has nothing to do with the fact that we were slaves. But it has something to do with the fact that we're free. So the question is, if we're in fact free, what does it mean, v'yochlut mameya? They didn't have time for it to rise? What's the big deal? So let the matzah rise. And the answer is that we can understand that it's teaching us the message then and now, the value of time. That Hashem wanted to make sure that even though we didn't have to eat matzah, but the great freedom was that now we could eat matzah and that we should eat matzah because we should not waste time. Now we're not slaves. When we were slaves, we had no choice but to eat matzah. But now that we're free, just like the Karban Pesach, in which all the on one level should not be raw, but we wanted it roasted. We want to make sure that it's prepared quickly. So it's not to waste time. So to Hashem says, I want you, now that you're free, I do not want you to allow this dough to rise, because I want you to see the inherent value of time. And this is the message of the Torah. When it says, Ushmartim es ha-matzos, that you should guard the matzah. What does it mean to guard and to protect this unleavened bread? So we know the famous difference between the words matzah and chametz. In matzah and chametz, they share the same two letters. They both have a mem, and they both have a tzad. The only difference between matzah and chametz is matzah has the letter hey, and chametz has a ches. To teach us the slightest difference between matzah and chametz, that if a person lays back and does nothing and doesn't value time, in a split second, that matzah will turn into chametz. And therefore, the message of the matzah is that Hashem didn't want us to leave Mitzrayim thinking that time was unimportant. And therefore, He wants us to eat as free people. Matzah, to show that we must be proactive, that if it's in the oven, we need to take it out quickly, not to sit back and to be lazy and to let time go by. We instead must value every single moment. Consider the following. To realize the value of 1 year, ask a student who has failed his exam. To realize the value of 1 month, ask a mother who has given birth to a premature baby. To realize the value of 1 week, ask an editor of a weekly newspaper. To realize the value of 1 day, ask a daily wage laborer who has 10 kids to feed. To realize the value of 1 hour, ask the lovers who are waiting to meet. To realize the value of 1 minute, ask a person who has missed the train. To realize the value of 1 second, ask a person who has survived an accident. And to realize the value of 1 millisecond, ask the person who has won a silver medal in the Olympics. Such is the value of the moment, the value of time. V'yochlu et mameya. When it came to the matzah, Hashem did not want it to rise. V'yachaltem oso b'chipazon. Hashem says that when it comes to the Korban Pesach, I want you to eat it chipazon quickly. Pesach u'Hashem. And on this, the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Tesamun Aleph says a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah until one is, when is a person allowed to eat the Karban Pesach, or nowadays the Afikoman. Rabbi Akiva says the mitzvah is until the morning, until Amud HaShachar. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says until midnight, till Chatzos. What is the dispute? Al Shas Chipazon. What does it mean, Chipazon? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Chipazon is the Mitzrayim. Says Rashi, when it came to the Makas Bechorim, when it came to the plague of the firstborn, which happened at midnight, Shal Yadam Nechvazu Maher L'Shalcham. At that moment, the Egyptians were pushing us out the door that we should leave. Of course, we did not leave until Betzim HaYom HaZen, until the next day. Now, Rabbi Akiva feels, my Chipazon, Chipazon di Yisrael, the quickness of the Jewish people. But the question is, what is the reason for Chipazon? Does Chipazon mean that we really didn't have a moment, we didn't have time? But it doesn't make sense, because we just said that when it came to Chatzos, midnight already, the Egyptians were pushing us out the door. We had that entire night to pack our bags, to spend time in the kitchen, to bake the most delicious bread. What does it mean then, Chipazon? What were the Jews in a rush? What was going on? So, we have three possible explanations. One, I once saw on a reality television show that, as all reality television shows are, they eliminate a person every single week. And they live in this extravagant, beautiful home. And they require every single person to pack their bags every week. And the one who is eliminated has to take their stuff and leave immediately. So you can imagine, after week one, you're anxious. Every week you're not sure if you're going to go. But the reality is, after a while, you believe, you know, it's probably going to be the other guy. And even though you pack, you may not pack so well. And you may not really anticipate, ultimately, that you're going to leave. So some explain that when it came to so many other lamakos before this, the last one, so many other plagues, Paro, who was so wishy-washy, said, yes, the Bnei Yisrael can go, they're free, and then he changes his mind. So in between, you can imagine the Jewish people finding out that Paro was allowing them to leave, they packed their bags, they were excited, they were all ready to go. And all of a sudden they had to unpack when they found out that Paro changed his mind. And again, and again, and again. Until finally, when it came to the plague of Machas Bechoros, when it came to the last plague, and they found out by Chatzos, by midnight, that they can go free, they said, you know what? Oh, we're not going to pack our bags so soon. But ultimately, that next day, Hashem did cause the Bnei Yisrael to leave, and when they realized that this, in fact, was the time, it had to be a chipaz, it had to be done quickly. Another interpretation is cited by the Malbim. A famous explanation of the Malbim says the reason why it was Chipazon was not because we didn't have a few extra minutes to hang out. After all, what's the big deal? Let the matzah turn into bread. But it has a different symbolism. V'chipazon, hu she'azkirenu bedus ha'nefesh. It was connected to our neshama. The reason why we eat matzah, shuzikaron ha'chipazon, to remind us of going quick, u'mehirus ha'yetziah, that we left Mitzrayim in a hurry. Shul hispik b'tzeikam shul avotenu hachmitz. Shinem rav yafu at the batzei ki gershim Mitzrayim v'liyachu. What was the rush? That they were unable la'atzmo et mameya. They themselves could not stay. Ki il hitzahavnu od ma'at. If they would have stayed in Mitzrayim even for a short amount of time. Hayu nechnasim b'tumma b'shar hachamishim. V'hayu nishkoyim ad l'olam. They would have fallen all the way down to the very lowest of the low, to the 50th level of tum of impurity, and there would have been no turning back. And therefore, according to the Malbim, the reason for Chipazon, the reason why we rushed, was not because it was such a big deal that the matzah couldn't rise, but it was because if we stayed another second, it would have been a second too late. But why? Why, asks the Divrei Shmuel, if we were so close to become hopelessly assimilated into Egyptian culture, why did Hashem redeem us at that moment? Why did he bring about Machas Bechoros at such a last moment that if we stayed even another second, enough for the matzah to turn into bread, which is literally moments, why would Hashem do that? Wouldn't it have made more sense? Instead of taking such a risk, such a chance, wouldn't it have made more sense for Hashem to have allowed us to leave a few days earlier, a month earlier, a year earlier, when we weren't so close to possibly assimilating and never coming back? But this is the idea. The third concept, which is built on this second one, is the power of the moment. And Hashem specifically took us out of Mitzrayim at the last second so that we would realize that every single moment counts and that a person cannot squander even a second. Chipazon, according to Ibn Ezra, says, L'chinasat tzli shloyet akfu babishl, as we cited a moment before, that the reason why, even though the Korban Pesach should not be eaten raw, I do not want it to be prepared in a kitchen where you're going to be spending hours and hours with your chef's hat and your apron. I want you to roast it. Stick it under a fire and eat it. Finish, quick. Because I want you to value time. And I want you to take action. I want you to be able to do. And I don't want you to sit back and to do nothing. Ushmartem et amatzos. On this, we can understand. Ushmartem et amatzos. Why one of the names of our holiday is Chag HaMatzos? Why is it called Chag HaMatzos? Maybe it should be called the holiday Chag HaMoror or Chag HaCleaning, which we spent months doing. Some people starting right after Hanukkah. What is this meaning, Chag HaMatzos? And on this, the Malbim says, "Wazos nikra hachag hazeh shenu chogim lezikaron geulas Mitzrayim b'shem Chag HaMatzos." Why? Ki hamatzos heim zikaron hachipazon. Because matzah teaches us the importance of the moment of going quickly and not wasting time. Ushmartem et hamatzos, says Rashi. Rabbi Yeshaya Omer, al tihikora et hamatzos el es hamitzvos. That reading, that you should guard the matzah from turning into chametz, but rather guard your mitzvos that you can perform. Kederech she'en machmitzin es hamatzah. Just like a person has to be careful to watch their matzah so it should not rise, should not turn into chametz. Kach ein machmitzin es hamitzvah. You should also not allow, if you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, to tarry and to wait. Rather, you should do it right away. We hear this Rashi, Ushmartim as a mitzvos. It's very difficult to understand, because it's really not a good comparison at all. Because when it comes to matzah, if you don't bake the matzah and take it out, it's going to turn to chametz and you have to get rid of it. You can't eat it on Pesach, it's chametz. You have to get rid of it. It's not allowed to be even owned. When it comes to a mitzvah, if I don't do the mitzvah right now, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I can still do it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. What is this whole idea of the importance of doing a mitzvah right away? And we find this throughout. Zrizim makdim l'mitzvos. Why is it so important to do a mitzvah right away? And it's seemingly not compared whatsoever to matzah and to chametz. To answer this question, we have to understand why people procrastinate. It doesn't make any sense. Because if you have a deadline, let's say, for example, April 15th is tax season. We know every single year. And yet, at the post office, we will be standing there for hours at 11:59 before the deadline, because we waited to the last second. Why do we wait to the last second? We know when Pesach is. Why is it crunch time that we have to wait till the last minute to do our cleaning? Why don't we pace ourselves? And you know, it would save tremendous levels of anxiety. We would feel so much more relaxed and calm if we just didn't do things at the last second. Why do we procrastinate? And the answer is, It's all about control. If a person waits and waits to the last second, then it's crunch time, and you have no choice but to do the mitzvah, or but to do this action. I have to do my taxes, or else I'm going to get in trouble. I have to clean my house at this second, or it's too late. We find this also when it comes to Shabbos. In the summer, when Shabbos starts at 8 o'clock, people are rushing for the last hour. And when Shabbos in the winter is at 4 o'clock, people are rushing for the last hour. It doesn't make sense. But the reason is that people do not want to take control over themselves. They'd rather be pressured and to have to do what they have to do, not on their own terms, but because they're being forced to do so. And it's all about time. If a person is able to pace themselves and is in control over their lives, is a lechem, is a melech over themselves, they'll be able to pace themselves. Instead, by procrastinating, they want to lose the lechem. They want to lose their sense of self and control. They want to feel like an eved again, have a slave mentality where time is no longer their own and therefore lose control. And this is the idea of Rashi. Imagine when it comes to a mitzvah of bris milah. A bris milah, zrizah matim l'mitzvah, you can do the mitzvah right away, right after shacharis at 8 o'clock in the morning. The truth is, you have the entire day. So, you could do the bris at 8 o'clock on your own terms, which shows you're in control of time, or you can do that same mitzvah a second before shkia, before sunset. And when it comes to the last moments before sunset, when you're about to do the bris milah, which you have to do during the day, v'yom hashmini, at that moment, you lose control. And just like the idea of matzah is about being in control over your time, so too, when it comes to mitzvos, when it comes to all other actions of our lives, is taking control, is having lechem, is being proactive as opposed to being reactive. And this is the reason we find immediately after the Seder, on the second night in many Haggadot, some people count the Omer. Sfiras HaOmer, Sefartim Lechem, is very strange. Why is it Sefartim Lechem that you are supposed to count? But why do we count at that late hour? It's 2 in the morning, we just finished Nirtza, we sang Chag Gadyon, made all the funny animal sounds, and you have to wake up half the people and say, wake up, it's time for the Omer, you don't want to miss the first night. But there's a bigger issue. The bigger issue is one is not allowed to eat anything until you perform a mitzvah. The mitzvah of Sfiras Omer kicks in right away at night. So why are we going through all the motions of our Seder and then the Sfiras Omer? And I believe the idea is that Sfiras Omer is all about time. It's about taking control over time and counting every single day to make sure that every day is valuable, to make our days, quote unquote, to make our days count, to take control over ourselves, to take control over time, and to become time conscious. And therefore we can now understand that when it comes to Sfiras Omer, even though it is at a later time, but to connect it to the Pesach experience of freedom, of realizing that we are now in control over our time, and then immediately afterwards to be able to count Usfartim Lechem, that now I am in complete control over my days and my weeks. There's an interesting controversy when it comes to making matzah. It was always that matzah was made by hand until about the year 1857, when the first matzah baking machine was invented in Austria. And it was a tremendously heated debate and worthwhile studying that many people felt that in fact matzo should not be made by machine, but rather they should be made by hand. In conclusion, an article states that they contended that the machine speeds the process and is more efficient than the men and women who worked in the bakery day and night. In other words, when it comes to the choice of hand matzah or machine matzah, it seems logical that machine matzah is better. A smaller chance that it's going to turn into chametz. Yet we find numerous people eating hand matzah. Not only that, people baking their own matzah. What's the whole idea of baking your own matzah? We don't have a mitzvah of making your own menorah on Hanukkah or cutting down a lulav from a tree on Sukkot. What is this idea of baking your own matzah? And why do we do it if, in fact, there's a greater chance of mistake than by machine? And I believe that when a person goes through the motions of baking their own matzah, they're able to realize everything that we've been discussing up until now. And that is the value of the moment, the value of time. It's true. You can go to the store and that matzah which was made by a sheen is more likely to be chametz free. And most likely, of course, when you make the matzah yourself, it'll also be chametz free. Great advantage of making your own matzah. And taking matzah which was made by hand, you realize the value of time. And this is what the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says in the first parak, that Hillel said, "V'im lo achshav im osai, if not now, when?" And the Rabbeinu Yonah, who died in the year 1263, says as follows on the words of the Mishnah, "Im lo achshav im osai, shel yomar," a person should not say, "Ani hayom asak v'malachti, today I'm going to do my work. V'machar efne v'esak v'esken atzmi, tomorrow I'm going to fix myself and improve myself. I'll be a better person tomorrow. Ki shem lo tipon, and maybe that time will never come. V'afil v'ifne, even if that day does come, even if tomorrow you do work on yourself. Hayom ahu cholaf abar batal osam amlechas Hashem, that day, today is gone. Lo yochol shlomo kol yomav, you will never be able to make up that day. Ki kol hayomim ashehu chay al adama chayiv hu lasakin atzmo. Every moment, every day that you're on this earth, you must fix yourself. Belasak b'mitzvos, and to be engaged in Hashem's mitzvos. Ve'en lo reshus levatam b'malachto v'fil shachas. You don't even have a second, not a moment to waste. And on this, the Archot Tzadikim, in his Shar HaZrizus, says as follows. V'ata tzar chadas, that you need to know. Ki midas hazrizus hitchil ocho hamidos. That when it comes to zrizus, of being quick, that is the first of all character traits of importance. Ki ein ha'adam yochol yos tadir al sefer. A person realistically can't spend all day learning. Ki tzarech lechol v'lishin v'lasas sarachav. You have things you need to do. You sleep, you have to eat, you have business to take care of. L'chein, therefore, he says, tzarech zrizus v'zehirus lachso v'sefer v'lmoid. To be able to go back to that sefer, you have to be able to have time to carve out. And the discipline of the value of time. The ayakshav, you shouldn't think. Oh, that yom gadol, vashana gadol, I have so much time. My day is long, my years are long. On this, it says in Perkei Avos, don't say I'm going to learn later on in my years, because that time may never happen. Gam al yomar adam, also you should not say, Ace erev hu kvar, it's too late. Imel chumod, if I go now to learn, Israch lamod miyad l'spalel, it's going to be time to daven. I only have 3 minutes until mariv, so I might as well just sit here and just space out or do nothing. No. Ki tova sha'achas lilmod, greater is even one moment of learning. You feel deeper echad, even one word that comes out of your mouth of Torah, mikol devarim shiba'olam, that all of the things in this world, there's nothing greater. Even one word, one can never take away and minimize the value of the second of time. If you imagine for a moment a bank which credits your account every single morning with lots of cash, $86,400 every day. But that money, there's no balance from day to day. And it does not allow you to keep that money. There's no balance tomorrow. Everything will cancel out. Any penny that you do not spend out of that $86,400 will be gone. So what are you going to do in that situation? If you are blessed with this type of an account, obviously you would draw out every single cent. You would not leave a penny there because it would be wasted money. And on this, we must understand that the $86,400 is not only money, it's also time. Every morning, it credits us with 86,400 seconds. Every night it writes off as lost. Whatever you have failed to invest to good purpose, it carries over no balance. It allows no overdraft. Yet each day it opens a new account for you. Each night it burns the records of the day. If you fail to use the day's deposits, the loss is yours. There's no going back. There's no drawing against the tomorrow. Such is the value of time. The importance of time is also clearly articulated in the book Zadig, A Mystery of Fate. It states, "What of all things in this world is the longest and the shortest, the swiftest and the slowest, the most divisible and the most extended, the most neglected and the most regretted, without which nothing could be done, which devours all that is little and enlivens all that is great?" The answer, time. Nothing is longer since the measurement of eternity. Nothing is shorter since it is insufficient for the accomplishment of your projects. Nothing is more slow to him that expects. Nothing more rapid than him that enjoys. In greatness, it extends to infinity. In smallness, it is infinitely divisible. All men neglect it. All regret the loss of it. Nothing can be done without it. It consigns to oblivion whatever is unworthy of being transmitted to posterity, and immortalizes such actions as are truly great. Time is man's most precious asset, unquote. Such is the value of time. So let us not procrastinate. Let us not wait and say time is not important. Let us value every single second. This Shabbos is Shabbos HaGadol. And even though this year is unusual in that Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, and technically that would be Shabbos HaGadol. The Shabbos HaGadol drasha was a week earlier. And the question is, why Shabbos HaGadol? What does that mean? So there are numerous answers to this question. I'd like to share with you one possible approach. We know when it comes to Shabbos day, we make Kiddush. And that Kiddush is called Kiddush Rabbah, a huge, enormous big Kiddush. In the reality, it's a euphemism. It's a euphemism because that Kiddush is not long. In fact, all one needs to say, all the different minhagim, is Borei Pri HaGafen, and you've fulfilled your obligation for Kiddush. It's not a Kiddush Rabbah. And it's possible that one may look at Shabbos HaGadol in the same way. Shabbos HaGadol is unique. We're very fortunate that Shabbos HaGadol, the actual Shabbos HaGadol, which is on Erev Pesach, the day immediately before Pesach, works out beautifully. Because all of our preparations must be done before Shabbos. In a typical year, we're running and rushing to the last second before Yom Tov starts, and when it comes to the first Seder, we're ice mesh. We plot, we're unable to function and truly have Simchas Yom Tov and to be able to celebrate the Seder, the first Seder, as we should. This year, we're very fortunate that on the Shabbos, we have Erev Pesach, and that Shabbos, we cannot do anything because it's Shabbos. So we rest. We have menucha, we can sleep, and then when it comes to the Seder, we'll be able to be refreshed and truly enjoy that Seder. which is an amazing experience, not necessarily only for the men, but especially for the women. The women will be able to truly appreciate and enjoy and love not just the second Seder, but even the first. But Shabbos HaGadol, maybe people have a negative connotation. And they'll say, you know, I'm cooking, I'm preparing Pesach, I have so many guests coming. Don't you dare invite anyone to our house the Shabbos before Pesach. The reality is, we're just going to get by. Let this Shabbos get by. It's not a Shabbos HaGadol. It's not a big Shabbos. It's an exaggeration. It's a euphemism. This is not a big Shabbos. We're going to just pretend that this Shabbos doesn't exist. We'll keep Shabbos, but we'll eat the bare minimum. Don't you dare touch that chicken. That's for the Seder. Don't you dare touch that food over there. That's for the Seder. Don't prepare for Shabbos. Don't do anything for Shabbos. Let the day just come and go. Shabbos HaGadol. The reason why this Shabbos of all Shabboses in the year is called Shabbos HaGadol is because we have to realize that every week and every day and every Shabbos is Shabbos HaGadol. Even this upcoming Shabbos, the Shabbos which is right before Pesach, that most people will overlook, will pass by and say, let's just kill this day. Let's just get through it so that we can get to Yom Tov. That is not the right attitude. The right approach is Shabbos HaGadol, the greatness, the value of every single day, every single Shabbos, even the Shabbos before Pesach. That is Shabbos HaGadol. We conclude with the Haggadah. The Haggadah tells us that a person must recite every day the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of leaving Egypt. And on this, the Pasuk says, the full Pasuk, Ki b'chipazon yetzasam eretz Mitzrayim, because we left with quickness, we value time. We value time, Ko yemei chiyecha, all the days of our life. And we can understand that this is not a game. This is not something that we're pretending. We did not leave Mitzrayim. I was never in Egypt. I was never a slave in Egypt. But nonetheless, I can still go through the motions of understanding and appreciating, as the Jewish people did, going Mi'avdus L'Cheiros and beginning to appreciate the moment, being able to appreciate every second of their life. So too we must begin to appreciate every single moment of our lives. Chaim Adam Lira says, Atzmo, by going through these motions, we'll be able to, just like them, begin to appreciate every second. How often should we appreciate? What part of our lives should we appreciate? Kol Yimei Chayecha, says the Haggadah, Yimei Chayecha Yomim, Kol Yimei Chayecha Halelos. It's every single day and every single night. Appreciate every single moment that we have. And if we do so, may we all be zocha to the words of the Chachamim, that Kol Yimei Chayecha is Lehevi Limos HaMashiach, that we should all be zocha to the building of the third Beis HaMikdash that should happen B'Meherah B'Yameinu, speedily in our days. Good job.